I'm here to, as they say, kick off the program, which I think promises to be interesting and has a lot of very high-powered and impressive people participating in it. And I think, not to overburden the program, I would simply begin with a thought, perhaps appropriate for this week. And that is, this is perhaps one of the most emotionally charged issues in Jewish life today. The question of women, participation, leadership, learning. It's an issue that, as many have noted, brings out sometimes the best in us and sometimes the worst in terms of our reactions. And I have a lot to say on this issue, actually. It's an issue that I've been thinking about for about 40-plus years, probably subconsciously even a lot longer than that, and have been in the rabbinate long enough to see some of the twists and turns and ups and downs regarding this whole question, set of questions. And so it's really hard to make a single sort of statement that expresses my view. So what I would rather say is that this is, because it's such a charged issue, I think it's very important in this issue particularly to be dan l'kav zchut, meaning that we not make assumptions when we talk, when we hear someone else talk about the issue of what women should be or should not be doing, what role they should play or not play, what positions in community they should occupy or not, that we recognize that these may be coming from a very, hopefully, sincere place, and that not to immediately assume the worst, in effect, of what the other may be expressing, but in fact assume the best as the intention. And that may be just my final opening thought, that unfortunately a lot of the discussion about this issue deals with motivation, making assumptions about motivation, why a woman would want to be engaged in a particular religious activity, why a woman would want to be engaged in a leadership role in a particular way. And so I would just offer the hope that during this week, when Sinat Chinam should be foremost in our minds, that we really try, I'm saying that not so much to you, but in a sense for all of particularly the Orthodox community, that we rather assume the best, be dan l'kav zchut, that what's being expressed is not for terrible or perhaps some kind of approach that might be considered damaging, but rather as an honest expression, and it should be respected as that. So that's perhaps more an opening thought about tone rather than substance, which I think tone, particularly in our day, is important, particularly on issues that are this controversial. So with that said, and you can feel free to ignore what I said, I want to call on our very special guest to begin the panel and introduce the panel as well. Our guest this week, really our scholar in the community, is Rachel Weber Lishaw, who comes to us having studied at SKA, Beit Midrash for Women at Migdal Oz, of course, Stella K. Abraham Beit Midrash for Women at Migdal Oz, an institution which my family has a wonderful connection to, as you may know. Has a BA, Jewish Studies, from Stern College, and then graduated the YU Graduate Program for Advanced Talmudic Study for Women, generally referred to in the YU world as GPATS, because only at YU do we come up with programs that are about seven words long. Rachel also has been a JLI education fellow at Princeton University. Some of you may know what that is. That's a program sponsored by the OU for college outreach. And she's also served as a congregational intern at a wonderful synagogue in Houston, Texas, called United Orthodox Synagogue of Houston, Texas. Happens to be a synagogue that I have a great sense of affection for. I was actually there, as I told Rachel Long, when it wasn't that united and it wasn't very Orthodox. So, some of them maybe still prefer that. Rachel, with her husband David and their son Joshi, live in Jerusalem, where she's studying at Nishmat's Keren Ariel program, which is for certification as a Yoetzet Halacha. Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Hain. I want to repeat what Rabbi Hain said in thanking all of the rabbis who came together and the sponsoring shuls who helped make this possible. Beth Shalom for hosting us, Rabbi Hain, and also Rabbi Miller, who's helped with a lot of details, Rabbi Septimus and the Young Israel of North Woodmere, and Rabbi Pearl and the Jewish Center of Atlantic Beach. You've all been extremely generous with your time and resources, and I really appreciate that, along with, of course, Maish Kranzler, who's helped us get a number of things off the ground and who came out here to support us tonight. We really appreciate everybody's help. Now I'd like to introduce our distinguished panelists, beginning from Rabbi Dr. Kenneth Brander, who is a vice president for university and community life at Yeshiva University and teaches rabbinics at REITS. He focuses on all aspects of student life experience, engagement with Jewish communities around the Jewish world, the graduate program of Advanced Talmudic Studies for Women, that would be GPATS, as Rabbi Hain mentioned, and YU's Israel-based initiatives. Rabbi Dr. Brander is a rabbi emeritus of the Boca Raton Synagogue, founder of the Yeshiva High School of Broward and Palm Beach counties. During his 14 years of service to that community, he oversaw its explosive growth from 60 families to some 600 families. Under his leadership, the Han Judaic campus was built to include the Boca Raton Community Mikvah, a sanctuary, library, social hall, a youth and senior center, and a yeshiva high school. He is a 1984 alumnus of Yeshiva College and received his ordination from the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary in 1986. He received special ordination from Machon Pua, a center of medical ethics in Israel, in 1999, and from the chief rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu in the field of medical ethics, infertility, gynecology, and halacha. He recently completed his PhD in philosophy and comparative studies. Rabbi Brander has received numerous awards for his community service and has authored many articles in areas of Jewish law and philosophy in various scholarly journals. It is an honor to have Rabbi Brander here. Lisa Septimus is the Yoetzet Halacha of the Five Towns and Yoetzet Halacha of Great Neck Synagogue, a graduate of Stern College's graduate program for Advanced Talmudic Studies, GPAT. We're going to get that out there. She subsequently served as the program's Shoal Adumei Shiva. She teaches Talmud and Chumash at North Shore Hebrew Academy High School in Great Neck, New York, where she also coordinates informal education programs and serves as an Israel guidance counselor. In her active role as Rebbetzin at the Young Israel of North Woodmere, she is integrally involved with adult education and youth programming. She has taught at the Jewish Center in Manhattan, Riverdale Jewish Center, Drisha, and Yeshiva University's Summer Learning Program. She and her husband, Rabbi Yehuda Septimus, are the parents of four young children. And finally, after 10 years of practicing law, Esther Eisenman transitioned to being an educator, giving shiurim to adults in the Baltimore community, and teaching and acting as Judaic principal of Beth Tefillah High School. Esther has been the principal of Midrashat Shalhevet in North Woodmere for the past 6 years. Those are our distinguished panelists. I think a round of applause is in order. Here's the plan for the evening. I've prepared some questions for the panelists, some for the whole panel, some that more directly relate to one or two of them. I'm going to ask some questions, we'll have some conversation, and then we'll leave time for some questions from the audience at the end, and we will end with Mariv around 9:15. On that note, my first question is as follows, and it's for all the panelists as a bit of an introduction. Torah study for women is something that is still relatively new on the scene. In fact, it was discouraged for many centuries in the Gemara and in the Rishonim. And yet, the presence of our panelists here shows their passion and belief in the importance and significance of Torah study for women. You all have different backgrounds in this field. Can you share what your experience has shown as the importance of this issue and the implications that might have for our community priorities? Rabbi Brander, do you want to start it off?
Okay. Rachel. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to actually be sitting on this panel with three living examples about the importance of women's learning and what it can achieve and what it can represent. First, I must say, first of all, thanks to the Rabbanim who put this together, but I've had the privilege of having Rabbi Hain as a teacher in my smicha. When I was in smicha, Rabbi Hain was working in the Division of Community Services and taught in the smicha program, so it's a pleasure to be here. And perhaps more importantly, people should be known by their children. Anyone who's working in the graduate program of Advanced Talmud Studies stands on the shoulders of Rabbi Shmuel Hain, who for many years worked on the program and helped develop both its passion for women's learning as well as a very, very rigorous curriculum. So although Shmuel's not here, I could actually say whatever I want because he's not here. He did an unbelievable job, and now that I have some involvement in it, I only now realize how much courage it took for him to do what he achieved over around 6 years or so. I'd like to just share one basic thought for a few minutes regarding women's learning and put it in a larger context. I didn't realize my father was coming, but I wanted to just share with you a story that has to do with my father. When my parents left Kew Gardens Hills, which they lived in for many years, I had spoken to my parents about us coming to help them move. And for many months, my parents resisted any of our offers for any of my siblings and my brothers-in-law to come and help them move, until at the last minute, so to say, basically a few weeks before the moving trucks were coming, they realized that they basically had not really prepared properly for the move. So we all took different parts of the house, and my children and I were responsible for the basement. And we were looking through the books, and we created a whole bunch of different piles of books. One set of books were books that weren't really so good, so my father could keep them. Another set of books were ones we really wanted, so those we would take. And then there were the surprise books. And one of them was this. And this is a copy of the Mesilas Yesharim, written by the Ramchal in the 1700s. My father, who survived the Holocaust and actually spent time in a DP camp, this is one of the Sfarim from the DP camp that were studied in the DP camp, and I assume my father and his father, of blessed memory, studied this Sefer. It's the Mesilat Yesharim. It was printed by She'eris HaPleita, it was printed by the Joint, and it was sent over from America for people who had just left the concentration camps. I don't mean left, but were redeemed from concentration camps, for people like my father who were hidden by righteous Christians, and the opportunity for them to engage. And it's unbelievable that they were interested in studying Torah. And sometimes I feel like rubbing the covers of this, and if they could talk, imagine the stories they could tell about someone's passion about learning. The first lines of the Mesilas Yesharim, one of the most important Musaf Sfarim, is the following. Yesoda Chasidut v'Shoreto Avoda, the primary responsibility of piety and the rootedness of understanding how to engage with God, Hu Shisbarer v'Yisameitz Etzel Adam Machovoto V'Olamo. A person should understand what his or her responsibilities are in the world. Uma Shitzarich Shiasim Mabato Megamato V'Chol Asher Hu Amel Kol Yimei Chayav. What one should look at one's talents and one's creativity in engaging in a relationship with God and making this world a more perfect world. I'm ad-libbing some of the translation, but this is exactly what the Mesilas Yesharim is trying to say. Women's learning represents what this Sefer is all about. The responsibility that we have to allow women the opportunity to be able to explore the richness of the Mesorah. It should not be that there is a glass ceiling on understanding the Mesorah. It shouldn't be that Mesechtas are locked to women, that Ravina and Ravashi's conversations and the conversations of the academy of Pumbedisa and of Sura should be locked to the women in our community when they want to grow in their learning. And I have the privilege of being part of a university and part of a program where I see women every single day study from early in the morning to late at night with the same hislavos as I see in the YU Beis Medrash, with the same commitment to engaging the Ramban, with the same commitment to engaging the Ramban, with a fight with the Ravid and with the Rambam, and trying to figure out what both personalities want to say, and for only one reason, and that is they want to grow in their Yirat Shamayim, in their awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and creating a romantic rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for someone to suggest that Torah Lishma, the capacity for women to play these important roles, is something we should negate, ignore, or not put emphasis on, in some ways really compromises our ability to celebrate what this Sefer, what Mesuvah Shasharim is all about. And perhaps more important than me, and with this I'll conclude, this is a copy of the Allgemeine Journal in Yiddish on Friday, December 20th, 1997. It starts from the least controversial piece, that is an interaction between Begin and Sadat, to a more controversial piece, and it reads like this. Harav Soloveitchik, excuse my Yiddish, Zug Eshten Gemarashir per Meterlach at Stern College. And Rabbi Soloveitchik gives the first Gemarashir for women at Stern College, and then it has a long essay regarding Rabbi Soloveitchik doing this with the picture. The question is, why did Rabbi Soloveitchik do this? I mean, Rabbi Lamb was in the room, Rabbi Willig was in the room, Rabbi Berman was in the room. Each one of them could have given the shir. And if you've ever listened to that shir, it's a beautiful shir. I don't think it's the most lumdish shir that Rabbi Soloveitchik ever gave. Someone else could have given that shir. And the answer is that Rabbi Soloveitchik wanted to make it clear that there would come a point in time where people would say, Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't know everything was going on at YU. He didn't really believe in women's learning. It happened at Stern College. Stern College is 100 miles away from Yeshiva University uptown. You know, how do you expect Rabbi Soloveitchik to have known what happened with women at Stern College? And therefore it happened, but he had nothing to do with it. He didn't endorse it. He thought, you know, irrelevant to the fact that he created a school in Boston where women were learning Torah Shabbat. Rabbi Soloveitchik was not supportive of this. And anyone to suggest that Rabbi Soloveitchik was supportive of this is in some way besmirching his name. He realized that this would once happen. And therefore, in order to make it clear, in order to go on the record, so to say, he decided that he would give the first Gemara Shir to make the clear statement that there should never be a time where women can't grow in their Avas Hashem and their Yiras Hashem through the study of Torah. And therefore, he gave a Shir to let everyone know. And sometimes even now, so many years later, there are people who are now suggesting that Rabbi Soloveitchik is against this. In fact, like a year ago, with this all end, with Rabbi, a year ago, people were saying that Rabbi Soloveitchik made an edict that the picture of him learning Gemara with women should never be posted anywhere, should never be placed anywhere. So we decided, after we heard about that edict, to make sure that it is promptly and publicly placed in the Beis Medrash at Stern College, so that everyone understands the fact that this was Rabbi Soloveitchik's dream, this was Rabbi Soloveitchik's wish, and as students of what Rabbi Soloveitchik represents, I think that what you see is just a continuation of his vision and a continuation of his dream. Thank you.
You don't have to stand, if you prefer to stand.
Okay. I grew up in Westchester in Scarsdale, and when I was younger in school, I actually had a bit of a mischievous streak, and I knew that when my parents attended parent-teacher conferences, they would hear reports about how I wasn't performing up to par, I wasn't necessarily behaving, I wasn't engaged, I wasn't interested enough. And it was true, because I didn't really find school all that engaging. And I didn't really love a lot of my subjects, including some of my Torah subjects. But much of that changed in sixth grade, when we were introduced to the study of Gemara. It was like a lightning strike in that suddenly, I became so enthusiastic. I was participating in class. the learning felt active rather than passive, and I was a totally different student. And this energy towards Talmud continued for me all throughout my schooling. I used to joke with my mother that when I was in Ramaz, there was this one math genius. He was studying calculus from the ninth grade. And what did he ever have to talk to me about? But before a Gemara test, he called me for help. It was like the biggest compliment I could get. And but beyond just feeling good about myself as a student, which I think is really important and what we would want for all of our children, it had a very clear connection to my religious growth. And all the way back in middle school, I was already envisioning spending time in Israel, learning more Torah, becoming more religious, pursuing a different type of life. And so for me, when Rachel asks about why is Torah learning for women something that's important, something that we should value as a community, it's because it has a direct result, at least on some people, in terms of their spiritual, religious growth, in terms of their sense of self, of who they are, both as a student and as a religious individual. And if that was true a generation ago when I was in school, I feel how much more true is that now, when we have so many different things tugging on our youth, and we are so concerned that how can we get them to love Judaism? How can we get them to want to continue and grow and stay part and engaged in Jewish community? Then we have to open more outlets to them, not fewer. We have to give a more diverse set of experiences and opportunities. So it seems really clear to me that this is an avenue, women's Torah learning, and that will mean Talmud or high-level Tanakh or halacha or whatever that means or however that's defined. And by the way, it also means different styles of learning for men as well. Maybe we've been too narrow in how we define learning for men. And open up our eyes and open up the opportunities a little wider than they already are.
So along the lines of what Rabbi Brander said, in terms of sharing some of his experiences about his father's learning after the war, I think I'm a unique woman, because my own experience in terms of learning Torah did not start with me. I'm a unique woman in the sense that my mother is one of the few surviving women who had learned at the seminary, the Beis Yaakov Seminary in Krakow. Not the only one, but one of a very small number, because you made reference, Rachel, to the idea that Torah learning was controversial until a short while ago, until Sarah Shanira really started the Beis Yaakov movement. And my mother did not learn under Sarah Shanira because she was already gone by the time my mother was there. But my mother did learn in that very seminary. So that's kind of interesting. And many years ago, I asked my mother, you know, what did you learn in the seminary? And I just want to tell you, my mother's a pretty smart lady. She was close to 80 years old, sitting with me in the kitchen, helping me prepare dinner when my son was in the next room practicing reading a Rashi when he was in third grade. And without having a sefer open in front of her, she corrected him. And I said, how did you know that? She said, I know that Rashi. And it was so pashut that she would know the Rashi. And he said the word wrong, and he did, in fact, say the word wrong. But she was close to 80 years old, and we were standing in the kitchen, and he was in the next room, and she corrected him because that was how good her education was. But when I asked her what they learned in the Beis Yaakov Seminary in Krakow, my mother became a teacher after that. My mother taught prior to the war, and she taught actually in the DP camps. She taught women's Beis Yaakov classes in the DP camps. And I asked her, what did they learn? What was her day like? And she gave me her daily schedule, and noticeably absent was the study of halacha. Forget Torah Shebal Peh, forget Gemara, forget that. That wasn't even an option. They didn't learn halacha. And in fact, my mother, who can correct a Rashi at 20 yards, okay, doesn't, and I don't want to say bad things about my own mother, but that generation was not educated in terms of halacha very well. And, you know, they know what they know because the way they did it in their town was to do it that way, and they brought the chillin to the bakery Erev Shabbos, and, you know, that was how they made chillin. But she doesn't really know the halachot of Bishul B'Shabbos. You know, she doesn't really know them the way we were taught when we went to school. So, we've really come a long way, okay? Because then I, myself, went to a modern Orthodox high school where Gemara was not offered. And I went to Stern at a time when the Gemara that was offered was, with all due respect to everybody who was teaching there at the time, not quite what it is today or what it could be or what it even should have been then. And I did not take Gemara when I was at Stern, and I did not graduate from the GPATS program because there wasn't one. And, you know, flash forward to so many years where I've watched it now in modern Orthodox schools, high schools at least, especially, teaching Gemara to girls is de rigueur. And a number of years ago, I met a neighbor on the street who was sending his daughter to a more right-wing seminary in Israel, and he said something about how his daughter was learning Ein Yaakov, and I was like, what did you say? And yeah, she was learning, you know, Midrash Halacha through Ein Yaakov in a more right-wing seminary. I don't want to misquote which seminary it was, but, you know, Gemara study for women may not be universal in all schools, but I think it's kind of, you know, it's here to stay, and it's growing, and it's becoming more and more accepted, and if you don't count starting for me, but if you start looking at the world as my mother experienced it, all the way to what I'm seeing now as an educator in the five towns now, we've really come a long way, baby. There's really no comparison from where we started to where we are. I think a problem is that, and I agree with everything that everybody else said, that this is our connection to Hashem, and yes, I, like everybody else, you know, my eyes were opened when I learned Torah on a high level appropriately in Israel, and then continued in Stern, and I, of course, grew as a person. But then I'm looking at this as an educator in the 21st century, and I'm looking at my own students, and where are they taking this? And I'm not really sure where they're taking this, because I'm not really sure, although official education channels have changed so much in the past 50, 80 years, okay, how much has our life really changed beyond that? Once you hit 25, I'm not sure that my graduates have that many more options than I did when I was 25, in terms of women learning Torah. I believe that it shall have it, and I'm sure that all the educators and all the schools believe that they're educating their students, male and female, if it's a co-ed school, to learn at the highest possible level, and we encourage each student to find herself, whether that be in a hashgafic way, in a textual way, find subjects that speak to her. And we encourage our girls to go to different places when they go to Israel for the year. And they all do. It's always such a bracha to see them flourish as such individuals. And then they go to their seminaries, and usually they love them, and they really grow, and they come back better people for it. And then a lot of them that go to Stern continue their learning. And if they don't go to Stern, thank God for JLIC, and they're doing a great job on college campuses outside of Stern in terms of bringing the learning on a high level. But here's where we are, because I just spoke to a student who's told me, graduate of Shall Have It from the class of 2012. We're a young school. My graduates are still young, right? So she graduated in the first graduating class, 2012, really bright girl. She was the salutatorian of the class. And she went on, of course, to Israel, and she came back. And I said, so how are you learning? What are you learning? Where are you learning? So now it was her second year after she came back from Israel, okay? So she graduated 2012. She came back from Israel in 2013, right? So not 2013, 14 year, but after that. Okay, so we're really talking about last year. Okay, JLIC on Queens College, which has the biggest, I think, from community in the New York area, biggest from population in the New York City area, maybe not as big as Maryland, but within our Dalit Amos, that has the biggest group of Orthodox students, and they just started a Beit Midrash for women. I said, do they have one for men? She said, no, because guys, when they come back from Israel, if they don't go to YU, they all go to some base medrash somewhere, and they're all learning in a yeshiva, and we haven't got those for girls. And I'm not saying that girls will line up either, but we don't have them either, and I'm not advocating that we start them, but there are disparities between the girls and the boys, and there's no disparity up until that point. What we're teaching them, especially if you go to a co-ed school, the boys and girls are learning the same things. And then they're coming back from Israel, and they're not necessarily being offered the same opportunities to continue their learning. So my graduates are still in colleges. If they're lucky enough to be on a campus with a vibrant JLIC, they have serious learning opportunities on a daily basis on a high level. Otherwise, it's kind of a mixed bag. I spoke to someone who's graduating Stern now. She really appreciated the GPAT's Junesman that was just offered, and so the learning Lishma on Stern campuses is also growing, but she said in the community it's hard for her to find a shiur that she really loves, that's really, and this is this student in particular, she's an anomaly, but you know, she's not the only one like her. She can't find something. She did 2 years of Shalvim, and she can't find something on a high enough level for her to go to on a regular basis once she leaves Stern. She's a little bit frustrated by that. And so I really, you know, I wish that we could see more in the community. I will also say that as someone that did not have exposure to Gemara when I was in school myself, and as a Tanakh teacher, it's sorely lacking. It's sorely lacking. So,
I loved what you said about being lucky as a particular woman of a mother who learns, you know, in an amazing institution. I'm extremely lucky to be from a younger generation. I was extremely lucky to have teachers who had already learned, and super quick anecdote, when I was in high school, a new halacha teacher walked in, and she was talking about, in addition to teaching, she's also this thing called a yoatzet halacha. And we were like, what's that? And so she starts explaining, yoatzet halacha is trained in the laws of Hilchot Nida, and she can answer questions for women, and teaches in the community, and has this role as someone who can help and teach on a high level. And I was sitting in the class, and I thought, that is what I want to be when I grow up. And it took a while, and I had to learn in all the right places, and I had to spend time in Israel and in Stern and in GPATS and apply and get into the Yoatzet HaLacha program. But 10 years later, I'm on my way because I had a teacher who said, this is what I do, and it's something that's available. And I feel like this is sort of the path of, you know, put the women in the places where they can talk to people. But to flip that a little bit, this was already mentioned really quickly, but Rabbi Brander, I was wondering if you could articulate particularly, why is women's learning important, not just for the women in the community, but for the men in the community and the community as a whole? Why should this really be more important to everybody?
Okay. So I apologize if my first part of my presentation, that was very politically correct. So I'm not sure I will be totally politically correct for this part, so please excuse me.
Let me know if I have to turn the recording off.
I think that there's a few different pieces. There's a few different pieces here that I think are important to realize. First of all, I can't wait to. Most of the women who are teaching Talmud in the United States, if not all of them that are teaching Talmud in the United States in high school, I don't want to say all because I'm sure I'm missing a few, but most of the women who are teaching Talmud in high schools in the United States are graduates of GPATS. And that's not because of any other reason, and that is there are not enough programs like GPATS that allow women to have the master the knowledge to be able to teach Talmud. But there are plenty of schools, both single-sex schools and co-ed schools, female single-sex schools and co-ed schools, that will not allow a woman to teach Talmud. And I'm not going to name the schools because I don't want to be so inappropriate, but the bottom line is, I can't wait till, you know, I was hoping that my daughter would have a Talmud teacher in high school that was a woman. That didn't happen. You know, we have two married children. Eventually we'll have, you know, please God, grandchildren. I can't wait till at least my grandchildren will have female Talmud teachers. We need to start if we put our money where our mouth is. If everybody in this room believes in women's learning, then everyone should be writing a check to Rabbi Nate Henkin for the OETSA program, and everybody in this room should be writing a check to GPATS. Now, I don't know about the Rabbi Nate Henkin program, but I can tell you that the GPATS program costs YU around $500,000 a year, and we could use the support. Now, I didn't come here to raise money for GPATS. But and even if it's only $18, it just makes a statement that you're connected to programs that advance women's learning. It's one thing to talk about it, it's another thing to do something about it. So we believe in programs in which women are learning and playing active roles. We should be supporting them. The other thing is we have to create opportunities for women within halacha to play leadership roles, and we will stumble in that process, and we are stumbling now in that process. There are some people who are supportive of some roles, and there are some people who are not supportive of those roles. I happen to be in an institution in which the yin and the yang is always felt greatly about some of these things, and great rabbis are on both sides of the aisle, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Sometimes it's a little complicated. Rachel, I'm sure, remembers the times as she was in GPATS where we had conversations about this yin and the yang. But that's fine. And you also have to realize there's another component here that's important. My sons need to see women who are educated and can learn. We need to see svarim. I'm not talking about some art scroll safer. I'm talking about real svarim with real chidushin Torah being published by women. If we truly believe that women are playing a serious role in taking the Masorah to the next level. That's not just for women. That's for men and women. Pachad Yitzchak was Rav Huttner's thoughts. Pachad Yitzchak was written by Rav Huttner's daughter. We need to be able to be Mechadish Kedushim. Women have that capacity. You know, there's thousands of shilas that women get in Hilchas Nita. Sometimes they call me with some of the questions that they're having some challenges with. You know, we need to start seeing shilas and tshuvas coming from women who are Yerushamayim and have Avas Hashem and also have serious learning. And by the way, for the young lady who cannot find a place to learn, you know, I would suggest that there's a website called YU Torah.
Yes, thank you. They told me that that's a virtual community. That's not a real community.
Yeah, no,
they want to be in a room with people. They all told me that.
Yeah,
I go on YU Torah if there's no good shir.
There's 130,000 shir. It's the best we can do right now. We're trying to create a larger community than that, but the bottom line is that. But I think it's important. I think that's important. And finally, you know, I think, and you should expect me to think this, but I really do think this. I think that unless your children have decided that they're spending their time in Israel, and they should be educated in Israel, I'm not just talking about seminary, I'm talking about even after seminary, and there are many more of our young people who are making the decision to continue their college education, Baruch Hashem, in Israel, and therefore making their home in Israel, even before they get married. I think we should try to make sure that our young men and young women, when they're able to, when it's the right place, should go to YU, both to Stern and Yeshiva College. We place more rabbis for JLIC than any other institution. Most of the rabbis who are teaching college campuses are YU musmachim. We meet with them all the time. 2 out of every 7 Orthodox kids who go to a secular campus after 2 years are not Shomer Shabbos, not keeping kosher. That might not be true about Queens College, but it's true about, just ask any of your children or grandchildren, they'll tell you that number. Some people say it's 3 out of every 5. Let's hope it's only My point is that who says that education ends, you know, when a child is 20 years old? We need to make sure that the next generation has serious learning. And we need to make sure that they have the capacity to learn on the highest level. And so for many young people, Stern and Yeshiva and YU are really not the right place for them, and they shouldn't go there. They're not doing anyone a service. But for those who it is, We need to make sure that we are finding ways for our young men and our young women to learn on the highest of levels. And we have to spend time celebrating that and representing that, and to make sure that our communities celebrate and represent that. Because when our communities celebrate and represent that, then it won't just help the women, but it'll help the entire population realize the role that women can play within our community.
Thank you.
First of all, I want to applaud everyone here and everyone who made this week possible, because one thing, we've been talking about how we educate young people and not ending at college or post-Israel, but I think adult education is very important. And when we talk about finding shiurim, one thing that has been interesting and I think challenging, we live in one of the greatest, when I was first considering moving here, a rabbinic figure from the area, a former rabbinic figure of the area, said to me, you have to move to the five towns. It's the Disney World for Orthodox Jews. And it is. We have access to everything here. What don't we have access to? Food and clothing and religious expression and the chesed that goes on in the five towns. It's very hard to match anywhere else. And the learning is amazing. But there is not the opportunity for high-level learning for women in the five towns that there should be. And this week is an exception to the rule rather than the rule, unfortunately. And I'm sorry for not being PC by saying that, but and many women, many people who grew up exposed, as you mentioned, with opportunities, with shiurim, have sort of let it fall by the wayside. And it's natural because if you're not a Gemara teacher, like myself, where it's part of your life every day, then work and children and life gets in the way. And it almost becomes intimidating or simply uninteresting. But one of my friends, a close friend of mine from high school, who doesn't live in this area, she lives in Westchester, but she told me that an amazing thing happened to her a few months ago. She started attending this Parsha Chabura, where every person had to prepare part of the text, and she had forgotten an important lesson about herself that she learned 20 years ago in Israel. She said, my year in Israel taught me, number one, that I should have more confidence in who I am and in being a little more adventurous. It also taught me that I am smarter than I believed about myself, but it also taught me that I love learning Torah and that I'm happy when I'm learning Torah. So many people have that experience when they're younger, but then it fades into the background. So I think part of a community taking it seriously means creating more opportunities, not just for our youth, but on the adult level. And part of that is also having female leadership. And just like having a female Gemara teacher in high school, having adult female leadership also. Because men get that, men have many opportunities for that role modeling.
I just wanted to add to that, back in a recent discussion with some of the OU leadership, which is having a conversation about the role of women, in synagogue life, I made the proposal to them that probably just as great a crisis in terms of religious engagement in Orthodox life and modern Orthodox life is the disengagement of adult women in religious life. They're doing religious work. They're doing a lot of hard work. But in terms of having people that they can really engage with, academically learning discussion, yes, there are Rebbetzins and there are teachers, but I suggested to them, and I meant it seriously, that when it really hits, the rubber hits the road, when they're 35 years old and they're dealing with the realities of life, they actually need that experience of religious engagement, Torah engagement, maybe more than their husbands did. And nothing makes me cringe more at a Daf Yomi Siyum when some Rebbe gets up and says, I want to thank my wife for allowing me the opportunity to learn. Meaning the implication is she doesn't have to, she stays home and she suffers while I'm out having fun. So that sort of paradigm shift is hopefully the logical progression of what's being produced, but it's not in place yet. And when you see an Erica Brown come out in the OU Jewish Action recommending that other women not do what she did and go into Jewish leadership, it's very disappointing. And that's a shame on us, on the adult Orthodox community that has not seen the priority of women's, I would call it women's leadership, particularly in terms of engagement in education.
I just add one thing for a second, and that is one of the classes that we give in GPADS is they meet with a mental health professional and they talk amongst themselves to deal with the challenges of how they're stereotyped in communities. So I'm not talking about the fact that if they walked into a bar park and they wanted to buy the chedushe of the Rosh Va and shots, it would be a little hard. I'm talking about if they walk in Teaneck, which is not viewed as the right wing of the Jewish community, there are actually people who will make fun of them that they're in GPADS. Am I wrong about that?
Unfortunately, you're not.
And we have these conversations. What? And we have these conversations about the fact that we're helping the women understand how they can handle sometimes the way they're mistreated. That just highlights it.
If I could just make one point of this, I wouldn't like us to come away from this. This is all about Gemara. Many women are not going to be interested in Gemara, just as many men aren't. And I think some of you said it. But women are entitled to more than Musar Shmuzin about how they dress. And they're entitled more than just to a question about a women's shayla. Women are entitled, and I would say much more than entitled, we desperately need. There's a reason why women in their middle years don't show up. Don't come to shul. Don't participate unless it's in a non, so to speak, religious activity. So I think it's critical. And I would just add one more thing, because part of this also comes out as kind of a knock on Haredi Judaism. I think it's totally fine if the Haredi world does not want to have its women learn Gemara. Elu ve'elu means I respect it. That is what they think is the right thing to do to create the kind of community they want. But that is not the community that I think we should accept as universal for Orthodox families and Orthodox communities.
I wasn't sure I was going to ask this question, but as amazing as it is, we're basically out of time because I want to take at least one question from the audience. But I'm going to ask one more question to the panelists, and I'll ask you to keep it as brief for a difficult question like this one. But it already came up, so I have to ask. We live in a professional world where no one goes to a doctor without a medical license, and you don't go to a lawyer who hasn't passed the bar. Do women teachers of Torah need a title? And what is that step in terms of saying this is something we value if we say a title isn't what's going to do that? So I know it's a hard question. I'm going to ask for short thoughts, but I'll appreciate a diversity of thoughts. So Mrs. Eisenman, do you mind starting us off?
I think a title would be nice. I don't know what it should be, and I don't, but someone just said it to me recently, when the person that changes diapers for the two-year-old program has the same title as the woman who teaches Gemara in the 12th grade, and that is Mora, and I am perfectly fine, and it's an honorable title, and Nechama Leibovitz put one word on her tombstone, and it was Mora, and it's a very honorable title, but it's the same one. And the woman who's teaching Gemara in the 12th grade to the top 12th grade girls has an academic accomplishment that not every Mora has, and so it would be nice to have the title. It would be nice, but I don't have any good suggestions.
Okay, that's very honest.
I also agree that I'm not going to get into all the different titles and which ones are acceptable or which ones aren't, but I will tell you that in my own time as a Yoetzet Halacha, I've seen how having the title changes things. I mean, one reason I became a Yoetzet is that this was really the deciding moment, was I happened to answer the phone in my house and a woman was calling my husband with a Nida question, and he wasn't home, and I ended up saying, do you want to talk to me about it? And with him, it would have been clear, yes, no, go to mikvah, don't. And with me, it became a whole story about how she had had a miscarriage and couldn't get to the mikvah, and how frustrating and painful it was. And after talking it out, she called me 3 months later to tell me she was pregnant. And I thought, why should these things happen by accident or happen chance? And a title gives people a place to turn, gives them an understanding of what you're doing. And that's important in our world. And I can
it
tell
also
you,
gave her a connection and a female role model that no one would have had 10 years ago.
Right. Or unless they chanced upon it. And I've seen how
there were no women like that. There were Yoetzet right. didn't exist more than maybe 10, 15 years ago. Yes. Right. 15
but
years ago.
I've even like seen 18, one last thing, even how being a Yoetzet changed my relationship with my high school students ever so slightly. How they treat me with a certain amount of halachic respect that I was teaching Gemara for 10 years before becoming a Yoetzet, and I sensed the shift, even though it doesn't change my teaching. So,
I think you're asking a great question. I think the points that everyone's made are important. I think Rabbi Haynes' point that he made, it's not just about Gemara, or it's not just about answering halacha, but opportunities for women have to expand. I think my concern is the fact that sometimes the titles paralyze our movement forward. That might not be fair, but I'm just speaking in the world of reality. So I have the opportunity at times to have conversations with various personalities in our modern Orthodox community, and sometimes it's the thing that paralyzes us is the title. So I think one of the reasons why GPATS wanted to make sure that it was a full-blown master's was to do exactly what you said, and that is to make sure that there was a rigorous state-approved title, but one that wouldn't give us some of the challenges that other ones would give. And hopefully we'll expand it not only to be in Gemara, but also the same type of rigorous learning in Tanakh, which should be the next step of the GPATS program.
How many girls are in GPATS?
There are 20 in the GPATS program.
It's not such a huge.
No.
I would just add. What's not huge is that those products, those students are not necessarily in positions.
Right.
There should be 60 shuls in America
right.
that have women educators
right.
hired, just as we would hire an assistant rabbi.
That would be cool. See, those I think are opportunities. Those, I think, are opportunities out there, the ability to...
Right. Just one quick point, that in Israel it's a lot less complicated because many of them are just Rabbanit. Rabbanit just covers everything. It's basically like we call a lot of people rabbis in America who don't have smicha. you know, they get married after 5 years in the mixed marriage. All right. So that unfortunately is.
Thank you. I guess let's take a question from an enthusiastic questioner.
My name is Hillel Marins. I'm a member here at the Bechon. So first of all, I want to congratulate all of you who are involved in women's learning, because when you look at the spectrum of Orthodox women's issues over the last 10, 20 years, the women's learning has been the most successful. You have so many institutions, so many opportunities, and such an acceptance. There are really very few people that we take seriously now who are against women's learning. It has permeated the community in a way that I think...
you don't know, it's the last 30 years ago.
You've been extraordinarily successful. But since this is a community discussion, let me speak as a member of the community. It would be great if all Am Yisrael were Talmidei Chachamim, but that's not going to happen amongst the men and amongst the women. The action is not now with women's learning. That's done. You've succeeded. Okay? The action now is in shuls and in tefillah and in ritual. And there is huge turmoil going on here. There are tremendous numbers of women who are suffering from a cognitive dissonance and an emotional disassociation, who simply cannot be judges and lawyers and doctors and sit comfortably in an Orthodox shul behind the gauze or behind a barrier, you know, even if it's small, and not involved in any ritual, and not involved in any of the ritual leadership roles in the shul. And I don't really know what the answers to these questions are going to be. And it's going to be a lot more than let's pass the Torah to the women when they take the Torah out, which is what we used to talk about 10 years ago. But this is a huge problem, and I think you as leaders have not succeeded in addressing this issue. I have yet to meet a woman who is a Yoetzet Halacha or women who have higher academic degrees who are out there talking about ritual issues, talking about, I'm sorry to say this, partnership in yoni, it's a dirty word. Who's talking about these things? The OU committee that has been appointed? In an act of insanity, the OU has put together this committee that we read about that is populated with Rabbanim who have already antagonized huge numbers of the community by speaking out against women. What are they thinking? Where is the leadership, and why is the failure in leadership so bad when it comes to ritual, and it comes to shuls, and it comes to women in shuls?
Yeah. Sure, please.
Okay. First of all, I think progress has been made on the women's learning front, but I don't necessarily agree with your assessment that it's a battle won and we can move on. And I sense still a lot of resistance to both to higher learning. I don't know of a single Orthodox school in this area that really educates the boys and girls in the exact same curriculum. I don't think so. And when I have approached people about it, the response I normally get is, you're the only one saying anything. So I don't think it's a fait accompli in that it's the battle won. I also think that when you speak about Yoetzot, first of all, there are opportunities for women to take a different leadership path, right? There's the Maharat program now, there's the Yoetzot program. So yes, you're going to be talking to a group of women who have actively chosen not to study to become a Maharat for whatever reasons there are. And I think you were right to use this word like cognitive dissonance, because there are, I can only speak personally, so I will only speak personally, that as an Orthodox woman, one of the reasons I'm in the position I am and I've pursued the path I have is a love of tradition, a love of the Judaism that I grew up with and the way it's unfolded, and a respect and a reverence for that, as much as it may be a slow process, and yet wanting to see progress at the same time. And it is not an easy, it's not easy to live with both loves and both desires. But it's something that I've chosen to live in that difficult place, as opposed to people who have chosen to push the envelope in a different way, and I respect that. I do. But, so there are people dealing with the ritual issues. It's just not necessarily the Yoad Soter. It's not necessarily some of the leadership the way you want to see it.
I also think the point Rabbi Brander made, that right now women aren't writing Sifrei Halacha, right? If you want to talk about making ritual changes, the people who are empowered to make ritual changes have so much more experience in the world of learning than almost any woman has ever had in the history of the world, right? And it's still something that there are women striving to do, but that conversation requires people to be at the table, right? You talked about a group of people who you are not particularly happy with making decisions for the Orthodox Union, right? Right now, there aren't any women who are invited to sit on that panel for reasons that are related to women's learning and not to women's ritual, right? I have all sorts of thoughts on issues of ritual and things that I would like different or the same or more impassioned, all sorts of thoughts. And I have those conversations with friends and with peers and with colleagues. And one day, maybe, I'll be having that conversation with a wider group of people. But so far, it hasn't happened yet, and I think that's one of the reasons we're still working on the women's learning side.
Right, and I just want to tie what everybody's saying in a little bit together, and that is that I think they're very much connected issues, and I think that's what everybody really is saying. They're very much connected issues, and once the women are in enough positions of leadership, with or without titles, more in the community, with a better education, and out there making connections to the women in the community, there will be more reason for women to come to shul and come to the table. It's hard. It's very easy when you have small children to not come, and then you just fall out of it. And then the men are always running to the shiurim and this and the that, and life takes itself in different directions. If there were more of a pull for women to come back more quickly, then perhaps we could have that. But that's all part of the process. And yes, I agree. It's a slow process, and that's what makes Orthodox, is that it is a slow process, and we're in Sare Leda right now, and it's going to unfold slowly, as things always do. The women's learning issue has unfolded slowly. The ritual issue will unpack itself slowly over time as well. I'm not that old, but yet I wasn't taught Gemara in high school, and now there isn't a self-respecting, you know, modern Orthodox high school in the country that wouldn't. So it's a long bird's eye view, but it's not that long. It will take time to unfold, but once we have women on all these positions, those changes will happen for women.
I hate to be the person to end what's a really impassioned discussion, and I cannot when Rabbi Brander wants to speak.
And the partnership minion piece, for a second. First of all, you should just the fact there are 110 graduates of GPEDS that are doing educational work and working in different places. So, and I think, as was just said, the more and more women that play roles, the better. There are 9 of them that will be synagogue interns next year who are students. And if we start supporting partnership minyanim, that people, great people like Rabbi Riskin and others have written strongly against from a halakhic perspective, I think you run the risk, whether you like it or not, of imploding a lot of the things that have already been accomplished, because there will be some people who will not follow Rabbi Haim's wisdom and they'll whitewash the whole thing. We have to be very careful. And in Jewish history, if this takes us another 5 or 10 years to do properly, then it's still a blink of an eye. And I think the beautiful comment that was said, that we're in the birth pains of what's going on here, is a very accurate portrayal. but let's not be mityaish. Let's just recognize the fact that we have a lot more work to do. But what has been started by a lot of wonderful people, which far predates any of us here, is continuing to grow. And in partnership with all of you, we'll be able to get to the next step.
Rabbi Pearl is just going to jump in with one last comment, and then I'm calling a timeout.
I think the responses to this last question, which is one of the burning issues of the day, in terms of women, where are the women at the table on these committees? I think there was a lot of wisdom in what was said, that firstly, there's a certain body of learning and experience that wins you a spot at that table, and it's wonderful that we're on our way there. But at the same time, you get a spot at that table when you have a professional presence and you're involved in leadership in the community. And so I guess my question for Rabbi Brander is, who's having those conversations in our world? Which body is thinking about what? You mentioned interns. We had wonderful experiences in my previous congregation with having GPAC interns. And the question is, all the rabbinic interns that I've had from REITs, they knew where they were going from there. It was a way station. They were interning for the purpose of. And I'm not necessarily asking, like, what's the job description and what is it called. I just want to know, who's having the conversations, and how do we get involved in those conversations as to what those roles should look like and how we go about creating them, and how we as a community and as community rabbis can help move that process forward?
So I don't think I have the time to really answer this in a responsible way, so let me just say two bullet points. Number one is, I welcome you to bring a group of rabbis together. Anyone that you pick, I'm sure, will be of first quality, and let's have a schmooze about what the next steps are for them. I welcome that anytime you want. I'll come here, do a camp to YU. Whoever you want to bring, I'm welcome. I am welcome to whatever. There will always be women at those conversations, and teachers, or anyone you want. I welcome those conversations, and we can talk about that. In addition, in that environment, I could also talk about the conversations we are now having on that issue. I'm not sure I would do it justice if I started having those conversations now, but those conversations are happening, and they are being discussed. And finally, we welcome in your new position, which should continue to be with Hatzlacha, are you bringing a GPAS intern there?
Or hiring a Yotze.
Okay. We could keep doing this for a really long time, and I know I'll stick around for a couple more minutes. I know I'm not the main person people want to ask questions to, but I do have some important announcements about the continuation of this week's Week of Learning. This flyer has been made available, and it's available over there. Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in this very room, there's going to be a Beit Midrash study session for women on a topic of the Ha'emet v'Hashalom Ehavu. Is Tisha B'Av really about the Beit HaMikdash? It's going to be really, really interesting. We also have a learning session at 8 p.m. on Wednesday at the Young Israel of North Woodmere, and Thursday at 11:30 with lunch at the Jewish Center of Atlantic Beach. Those are women-only sessions. We also have two sessions that are open to men and women, because as we've discussed, that's really important. So tomorrow night at 8:15 p.m., there will be a shiur from Sarah Robinson, who's a current GPAT student, if you haven't heard enough about GPATs. And then Thursday night at 8:15 at the Jewish Center of Atlantic Beach, Dr. Julie Stern-Joseph will be giving a shiur that's also open to men and women. There's also this flyer if you want to hear more about places that women are being involved in teaching Torah. And I think we have a minion for Maariv if people are interested in staying, men and women, obviously, interested in staying for Maariv. Thank you again to our hosts.
Thank you.
Everyone who's been involved.
There are some refreshments, I think, or at least some drinks over there.
Kenny.
Do we have 10 for a minion for Maariv?
Okay. Excellent for Maariv.
What?
I'm going to go to GPAC. I am the oldest daughter of the last baby. I'd like to make a suggestion as an educator myself.
I'm so sorry. You can't just to learn.
You're right. I'm used to teaching in a more diverse